Good morning, everyone. Well, regardless of the geopolitical situation or the politics here in the United States, for thousands of people and financial institutions all over the world, 2008 ended and 2009 begins with one name, Madoff, Bernie Madoff, who allegedly bilked a global network of investors in the largest Ponzi scheme in history. And 2009 is probably going to, well, we can only hope that 2009 will get us to the bottom of this scam, both in terms of its psychological dimensions, its financial dimensions, and its criminal dimensions. And covering the story and joining us to explain all things Madoff, tantalizing and economically interesting, is Diana Henriquez, senior financial writer for the New York Times. She's right here in the studio with us. Diana Henriquez, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here, John.
So first of all, let's catch us up on where the scandal stands at this point. There was a deadline for Bernie Madoff last week to disclose a certain amount. What do we know and where does it go from here?
Well, we do know that he made that deadline. These were personal assets and liabilities that the Securities and Exchange Commission required him to report on. His business, of course, is in the hands of a court-appointed receiver who is managing it. There was, it should be said, a legitimate business. Madoff was an enormous stock trader. They made markets for other dealers in stocks, not at the retail level, but among other professionals. And that was the core of the business. That was what his reputation had been based on. And that's continuing to function. And they're trying to preserve value in that business for the investors who he is accused of having bilked.
And, you know, there's a legal question as to what the exposure is of those investments to the liability and the, you know, recompense that's going to be required from Madoff on the sort of the other floor where the so-called Bernie's hedge fund, you've even reported in your paper, took place. Well, let's talk about some of the names that have emerged, because we've got Kevin Bacon, we've got Jeffrey Katzenberg, we've got Steven Spielberg's charities, we've got banks over in Spain and Switzerland and all the way over
suicide.
In Japan. And a suicide,
allegedly
exactly.
Related to the Madoff
scam. A French financier. What did these names tell you about the nature of this network?
Well, what struck me about it immediately when these names started to surface within a day or two of the announcement of Bernie's arrest was that this is probably the first truly global Ponzi scheme. Ponzi schemes have been around even before Charles Ponzi, for whom they are named. They used to be called Peter-to-Paul schemes, as in robbing Peter to pay Paul. And then Charles Ponzi came along in 1920 with his efforts up in Boston and gave his name to this kind of gimmick where you're luring investors in with promises of good returns and then actually paying those returns with the money you get from later investors who want to invest with you because of those great returns.
So you're not making money on the interest rate or the quality of the investments. You're just basically churning the cash from the indoor and putting it in the outbox.
Exactly, right. John. That's it. And that is what, according to the criminal complaint against him, that is what Madoff confessed to his sons he had been doing. But the reach of it astonished me. I mean, we had the sovereign wealth fund from the Persian Gulf. We had Swiss banks. We had, as you said, important charities, formidable celebrities. I don't think we should forget, though, that there are also enormous numbers of people like you and me. It sounds odd to say that, but people who started investing with Bernie early and entrusted him with an increasing percentage of their wealth, who are modestly comfortable people, and they gave all of, and now they are completely wiped out.
But we spoke with someone on this show who didn't even know anything about Madoff. His investment advisor had made the decision to invest with Madoff and lost, what was it, something like $2 million?
Yes.
Yeah, vanished.
Yes. And when you say the extraordinary reach, what was it that allowed him, if it's true, to conduct this scheme and impress so many people of so much intellect for such a long time?
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
We keep asking that over and over again, and no one seems to have a good answer.
I know. And I think one of the curious things about it is that if it unfolded as alleged, it was a very modest Ponzi scheme. He wasn't promising people 150% a month. He was promising them 8%, 10%, 12% a year. And it seemed to his alleged victims a very conservative investment. So I think that was part of his increasing appeal, that as the markets and the world seemed much scarier, globalization has unsettled great tectonic plates in the economic world. And for people who wanted something safe, he seemed safe. I think that's one of the appeals. He seemed safe.
But let's hold on that for a second. Mm-hmm. In 2008, that completely flipped. Suddenly an 8% almost guaranteed year
Sounds
after year,
enormous.
Quarter after quarter.
So it,
suddenly you're like the best in town. And suddenly the Klieg lights are on Bernie Madoff. And maybe that's what brought him down.
Well, possibly that, or possibly the fact that people suddenly needed cash because of the turmoil in the markets, whether you were invested in commodities and saw that price plummet after July, or whether you were invested in stocks and you needed to make margin calls. It looks to me like he had been a repository for cash, kind of a supersized money market fund, that people were using him, particularly the professional investors, the big hedge funds who came in later, were using him as a place to put their cash reserves that would pay interest to them. And then when things became so unsettled in 2008, particularly the last half, people may have wanted cash and said, oh, well, just call Bernie. That's where our cash is.
Right.
And it wasn't there.
Bernie's got it, of course. So, and the timing of those redemptions is really the story we're going to learn in 2009. And what was the point when Bernie knew – the jig was up. I'm when I approach this story or the Blagojevich story, as Adora is wont to tell me all the time, I'm more like a screenwriter. I think of vast scenarios. You're the reporter here, and thank goodness we have you. Let me run a scenario by you. Because of the economy and its sort of constant upward motion, the sense of easy money and the kinds of returns we were getting on credit default swaps and derivatives, it was easy for Bernie to do this. And every month he may have had a chance to maybe get out, but it was just like, oh, well, it'll go for another month. It'll go for another month. And he was just sucked in. It was sort of like the question we're asking today. An original decision leads into an avalanche of financial catastrophe. Do you think that's a scenario that's plausible here?
Well, I can only look at history, John. And I share your fascination. I can't wait to find out what actually happened here. But if you look at history, typically that is the Ponzi scheme arc. It starts out, at a very small scale, and you keep thinking that you're going to be able to catch up and put it back, but you never can. So there are some indications statistically that there may have been a period of time when Madoff could have operated the investment returns he was providing legitimately. He was actually paying less than you could make in the market, which would say that perhaps he could take my money, mm-hmm. put it to work, make enough to keep a profit and give me the 8%, 10% back. There was a time when you could do that, but it was more than 8 years ago.
Hmm. And do you think we're going to find out this year whether or not in this alleged scheme, $50 billion was actually at stake?
Well, $50 billion is a notional amount. I think what we may be dealing with here, and I'll be interested to see, is wealth people thought they had. Not necessarily wealth that he collected, but wealth that was showing up on the statements of people who had invested with him that had never actually been there at all. Now, clearly, there were billions involved. We've already seen accounts from Europe and from the Far East that are adding up well north of $20 billion now that was real money that people gave him. So we're in the billions. This is without a doubt
really?
The largest Ponzi scheme ever. But whether it was $50 billion in real money or $50 billion in money people thought they had and didn't, we don't yet know.
Before we go, there's all kinds of details in this story, from the stolen statue down in Florida with a note delivered on it to this very sad suicide of the French financier. What detail has struck you the most before we go?
I think it was that it was his sons who had to turn him in. I was struck by that. We didn't confirm that the two senior executives were his sons for a day or two, but when that landed on me, I said, oh, man.
Now you sound like a screenwriter.
No, wow. But I mean, it is like a wowie moment.
Yeah.
It's a Shakespearean. Yes. There's comedic elements, and there's the arithmetic there. Diana Henriquez, thank you so much for coming to the studio and sharing all that. I feel up to date now on the Madoff scandal, and hopefully. I haven't had the courage to call my financial advisor, so I really actually don't know
if
there's any
those.
Involvement.
I don't open any of those envelopes.
Diana Henriquez, a senior financial writer for the New York Times, talking about the Madoff scandal and what we can expect in 2009. Thanks, Diana.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.